digital disruption is changing expectations for what currencies do and whether they flow on digital rails. And if other countries get ahead of this trend first, it could threaten the hegemony of the dollar. And it also means that the US could lose out on valuable benefits.
Hey gang, it's Tuesday, January 25th. Let's be honest, it's so early. I don't know why we book these early recordings, but you need to lower your expectations for this episode.
Marcus, I'm with you. Yeah, I was out until like midnight last night. I'm dying.
Oh gosh.
It'll be okay.
Okay, we'll get through it. Yes, we will. I'll get through it with Eleni and Dan and also the listeners. Welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Smartly.io. I'm Marcus, and today I'm joined by those two folks. Let's meet them. We'll start with our principal analyst covering fintech. It's Eleni Digalaki.
Hi, Marcus. Thanks for having me back.
Of course. Thanks for being here. We're also joined by VP of Content and Head of Financial Services, Dan Van Dyke.
Good morning, Marcus.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for hanging out, folks. So today's fact before we move on. In Sedona, Arizona, the golden arches of a local McDonald's are turquoise. Why? In 1993, the city of Sedona allowed McDonald's to open in their town under one condition. They changed the color of their logo to teal in order to preserve the natural beauty of the red rocks in the area and keep the overall aesthetic of the town. Sedona representatives were concerned the giant golden M would clash with the tones of the surrounding landscape. So it's the only McDonald's in the world where the arches aren't golden.
Great reason to visit Sedona.
For some reason, I really want to see it, and I know it's going to be incredibly underwhelming. I'm going to Sedona to look at the McDonald's, not for the beauty of Arizona, no. Oh, it's a welcome into. Anyway, today's real topic, finance trends for 2022. All right, folks, on this episode, we're going to be identifying some of the leading trends in banking, fintech, and payments. We just put out reports on each, looking at the trends from each of those different categories in 2022. We'll start with banking. And the trend here, Dan, is about super apps. And in our latest 2022 Banking Trends report, we write that the West's answer to super apps finally takes shape. Dan, what do we mean by this?
Well, I mean, first, it's important to ask, like, what is a super app?
Yes.
And it basically just means that it's a digital ecosystem of products and services under a single application. So think, you know, what Amazon is for whatever you want to buy. This is that for financial services. If you want to pay, if you want to bank, invest, get insurance, you have a single source. So in China, we have examples like Alipay and Tencent that have sort of pioneered the model. And it's important from two different perspectives. One is from a consumer perspective. It's really simple because if you want to do anything financial, you just go to a single source. And then two is from the provider's perspective, you are raking in the dough. You stand to make an absolute killing because you're selling everything. So in the West, we're never going to see quite the same level of super app as in China because the incumbents are a lot more entrenched and the regulatory landscape is more complicated. But the exact shape of Western apps, which has still not really been fleshed out, we're saying that's going to start to be articulated in 2022. So what does that mean? It means that PayPal, Revolut, Square, to some extent, will start to build out what the West's answer to these everything store for financial services applications is really going to look like.
Right. I was speaking to Yuri Wormser, who covers mobile for us, about this. And we seem to both agree that there's going to be some hybrid version of what super app means to the West. It's not going to be it does one or two things. It's not going to be it does 20 things like they do in China with WeChat. It's going to be that it does four or five, maybe six, seven, eight or nine things. And that's what it's going to look like. You mentioned PayPal and Revolut. You say that they could launch in the report. They could launch the first Western, if you will, super app to break through in 2022, but they need to add an array of offerings beyond payments and banking to hit the mark. And they will do precisely that this year. How so?
Well, so first to your earlier point, the West's answer to a super app is going to look a lot less like the buffet solution, like in China, and more like a tasting menu. And the line at which you, you cross the line from application to super application is sort of, it's blurry, it's amorphous. But I think everybody can agree that at a certain point, once you roll out enough services, you cross that barrier to be the single source that people think of when they think, I need to do something financial. Mm-hmm. And for Revolut, for PayPal, for Square, that line's going to look very different. But each of those three companies are investing heavily to build out solutions to pass that threshold. And it's anybody's game who can pass the finish line first.
Mm-hmm. One interesting prediction I saw in the reports on for this was that Square will finally make its super app play this year. So check out the report for why we think that's going to be the case. Let's move on to our fintech trends. We're talking about digital brokers. So we write that digital brokers hunt for new revenue sources as the day trading frenzy dies down. Eleni, what's happening with this trend?
So just to give a little bit of context, the last year we saw crazy growth in day traders, especially with strict lockdowns and with COVID relief that meant people had more money to spend. Those platforms really benefited from these things. And we already saw in Q4, this is easing off and we expect it to ease even more so into 2022. But these players still, obviously, they want to keep that momentum. So what do they do? How do they find new revenue streams? And we expect them to focus primarily in two areas, and that is cryptos. Cryptos, obviously, were a big driver for the revenues last year. And now it's how do I find new ways to benefit from cryptos? And then the second key area is social trading. This is popularized by eToro, and it's becoming more and more popular as we see the rise of influencers, and so social elements that allow users to discuss, share trade, and also copy the trades of those influencers are going to become more popular next year.
Mm-hmm. How is this trend going to really take off? How are financial services going to pull in people using these different social tools? Will it be one or two social tools that people just can't not use? Will it be certain finfluencers that people just can't help but follow? What's going to be the catalyst to pushing people onto these platforms to use their social features?
To be honest, I'm not sure. I think a lot of platforms will be experimenting and with what exactly can create sticker clients. But what we've seen from eToro and ZuluTrade is that these social elements boost engagement, and that's what these platforms are essentially looking for. They've tried to do it in different ways. In 2021, we saw Robin Hood launched this confettis, which is sort of like a gamification of trading. Mm-hmm. But there was immediately a lot of pushback from regulators because it looks a lot like investing advice. And so I think social trading will be much more preferred by the digital brokerages just because it doesn't attract that type of regulatory scrutiny whilst being popular with users.
We also write that players will cast a wide net by exploring lesser revenue opportunities. Sounds counterintuitive. Why would they be doing this?
It's again a matter of seeing what sticks. So diversifying the bets. Yes, crypto will be a bigger investment, social trading as well. But when it comes to secondary potential drivers, they're going to experiment a little bit. I think one area that they're going to experiment with is a longer-term investing options. So as day trading dies down, how do we keep those users on the platform and maybe for a longer time frame as well? Robinhood has already hinted at plans to offer retirement accounts, so that could be an option. And then something else that I expect is to see these trading apps look to ride new sort of trends. So, for example, now we have the Metaverse. eToro just rolled Metaverse Live, a portfolio covering stocks and crypto assets within that growing industry. So, yeah, it's just about finding other emerging trends and trying to ride the hype.
We mentioned Robinhood and eToro, other players as well. Who's the one player in the space you're paying most attention to this year?
Again, I'd say it's probably Robinhood and eToro. They're massive.
Ellen, you mentioned that these companies are looking for new ways to benefit from crypto. How so?
Yeah, so crypto transactions form the bulk of eToro's and Robinhood Q2 trading commissions last year. And so obviously they're keen to continue drawing revenues from crypto, but how do they do it? A common tactic that I expect us to see is adding new cryptos, particularly the right coin at the right time. Dogecoin was huge in 2021. It made more than a third of Robinhood's crypto transaction in Q2. So the question on those platforms' heads would be, what's the next Dogecoin? And do we already offer it to our clients? Mm-hmm. And then another popular move will be adding crypto wallets. This is to ease transactions with crypto and essentially encourage greater trading volumes. And just to explain it a little bit, crypto wallets allow users to directly hold and receive cryptos without having to convert them into fiat currency first. So it's about ease, as I said.
Mm-hmm. Fiat currency, explain that for our listeners.
You know, the dollar.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of crypto, let's move on to our payments trend. Crypto sells out as governments buy in. Dan, what does this mean?
Well, I think when you think of the aesthetic of cryptocurrencies, you sort of think like Neo from The Matrix, Burning Man, steampunk. You don't think Joe Biden. And cryptos were created to exist sort of outside of the financial services mainstream, not tethered to a government, decentralized, not held by a single organization. But governments are now seeing the benefits of cryptocurrencies, and they're launching what are called central bank digital currencies. And all that essentially means is government-backed cryptos. And when you look at different governments across the world, other governments are far ahead of the US. So China is expected to make an early 2022 launch of its digital yuan. India is expected to launch its own central bank digital currency, according to us. So that's our prediction. And the Fed just over the weekend released a paper laying out the pros and cons of launching a central bank digital currency. So a little bit of, you know, behind the curve, just starting to think about it. And why this is so important is that digital disruption is changing expectations for what currencies do and whether they flow on digital rails. And if other countries get ahead of this trend first, it could threaten the hegemony of the dollar. And it also means that the US could lose out on valuable benefits like increasing and improving domestic payment options, improving international payments, and bolstering the dollar's, you know, peak international role. The dollar is the currency of world trade, and that gives the US really special privileges like borrowing from the Fed with extremely low interest rates, very low default risks, and all those could be threatened if the dollar doesn't keep up with digital change.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is there any way, any world in which the dollar could actually catch up, or is this kind of a foregone conclusion at this point?
I think the dollar could catch up. And to be clear, I think the Fed is playing this right. You don't want to be a fast mover. You don't want to move fast and break things when it comes to the financial services ecosystem. And the dollar is sort of what makes that ecosystem run. And so the Fed is trying to consider this from every angle. They've released 22 questions and they're soliciting public feedback on those questions. It should wrap up about May 20. And at that point, they're expected to think about it further. You want to take a thoughtful approach to rolling out the so-called digital dollar, because if you get it wrong, trillions of dollars are at stake.
Mm-hmm. There's some research in the report from the Economist Intelligence Unit asking the likelihood of CBDCs to replace physical or fiat national currencies in their country, according to institutional investors worldwide. 56% said yes, 34% said no, a handful said I'm not sure. Do you agree? Do you think CBDCs will replace physical national currencies? And what does that actually mean in practice?
I think they will replace international currencies eventually. I think for the near term, it's going to be a combination of the central bank digital currencies being held in reserve, in addition to the analog version of the dollar and other assets. So it's not going to be an overnight change by any stretch of the imagination, but this will take place. And what that essentially means is that there will be a lot of benefits. So it'll streamline trading, domestic and international payments. There are also a lot of risks. It could lead to faster bank runs. It could lead to some privacy and security concerns. So there are pros and cons, and this is a big issue with a lot at stake.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's all we've got time for the lead. Time now for the halftime report. Dan, what are your two takeaways? Let's take one from each of the trends you talked about, one from super apps and one from crypto.
Takeaway one is that the digital dollar is probably coming. So the Fed is signaling an openness to think about it. And I believe the outcome of this is that the Fed will eventually launch its own central bank digital currency. And the takeaway two is that super apps are going to hit Western shores, but it's going to look very different from Alipay overseas. So the West's answer to super apps hasn't been fully articulated. It's going to take shape in 2022, and a front runner is going to emerge in the space.
And Eleni, takeaway for digital brokers?
So key takeaways, players are going to be casting a wide net, trying to maintain revenue momentum, and cryptos and social trading are the two key areas of focus.
Perfect. Well, the three reports we've been referencing are called Insider Intelligence's Banking, Insider Intelligence's FinTech, and Insider Intelligence's Payments. Three separate reports, trends to watch in 2022. That's how they all finish. That's all we've got time for the lead story. Time now for In Other News, but first, a quick word from our sponsor, Smartly.io. Hi to all the social media marketers out there. Listen up. Social platforms have become more important than ever for brands. You know this. So if you're looking to scale your social advertising in 2022, look no further. Smartly.io is number one in social media advertising. They help brands automate every step of the process by combining creative production and ad buying to unlock greater performance. To get the brand new 2022 social advertising trends report, go to smartly.io/emarketer. Right, folks, we are back today in other news. While financial services institutions are increasing their yearly tech budgets, and fintech funding hits record levels. Story one, in JP Morgan's recent earnings call, the largest US bank reported record profits and a plan to build 400 new branches. It also said it was increasing its yearly technology budget to $12 billion, writes Zachary Miller of Tearsheet. That $12 billion is up from $9.5 billion in 2020. The $12 billion tech investment is split into two categories, run the bank and change the bank. Run the bank investments include spending on cybersecurity, data strategy, etc. Change the bank technology investments include offering services like a digitized mortgage experience with Chase My Home. Analysts struggled to accept the jump in tech spending, wanting to know when the company expects the investments to yield profits. And CEO Jamie Dimon said, be patient. Dan, the most interesting part about JP Morgan's increased technology investment is blank.
So I guess that tech spend is going all in. They're trading their treasure for technology. They're putting it all on the line and saying that in order to compete with big techs, with neobanks, and anybody else that might upstage Chase, they need to spend from a position of strength and escalate their spending to the tune of $3 billion. So coming up to $12 billion in 2022. And only by doing that can they stand to be in a good position to reap the benefits of digitization, which is really a winner-take-all proposition for the most part.
Story two, fintech funding hit record levels in 2021, but 2022 could be even bigger, writes Insider Intelligence research analyst Michael Tattershall. He notes that CB Insights' 2021 State of Venture report confirms fintech funding broke records last year, reaching $132 billion, way up on 2020. Fintechs captured one in every $5 from venture capital firms, he continues. Eleni, blank will be largely responsible for driving fintech funding in 2022.
New tech applications and B2B tech firms.
And why is that?
So new tech applications were looking at things like open finance and blockchain. Why we see them attracting even more funds this year is grabbing a wider pool of global investors, including hedge funds. For when it comes to blockchain, crypto exchanges specifically, we foresee that they will attract an abundance of capital as the market remains very bullish on them. And second area, B2B tech firms. It's basically those fintechs that help other financial services firms digitize. And statistics show that digitization is still very much ongoing. Those big companies are going to increase their spend to digitize next year. And also, a staggering 94% of financial services firms have said they're still struggling with the pace of digital transformation, according to a survey by the ITRS group. So the combination of increased spending and a struggle and a difficulty in digitizing means that B2B fintechs will benefit, and they will be able to come in and provide their solutions and infrastructure. And as such, they will attract capital to be able to do so.
That figure leapt off the page for me as well. 94% of financial services firms struggling with the frenetic pace of digital transformation in the past 2 years. Yeah, very honest. They weren't like, we got it covered. They're like, whoa, slow things down, please, for the love of God. That is all we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Eleni.
Thank you, Marcus. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you to Dan.
Thanks, Marcus.
Yes, sir. Thank you to Victoria. She edits the show. Thanks to everyone listening. Tune in tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Brand Anatomy, the marketer podcast made possible by Smartly.io, where our very own Jeremy Goldman, our director of the eMarketer Briefing, will be sitting down with Sephora and Gage.